And that's essentially what Vitalik's tweet is identifying. The vision 4 years ago, he was expecting it to be a lot different today than what he's seeing currently.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join us as we delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver market insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit subscribe for your bi-weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid anytime, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Crypto Brief. I'm Matt Allen. This week, I'm joined by Jack Newrider and Max Waddington. And it's certainly a good thing that we have our resident expert on Ethereum, Max, with us, because we're going to do a deep dive on some developments in the Ethereum ecosystem, including a bit of a retrospective on the Fusaka upgrade, a bit of a discussion around some L2s and the rollup-centric roadmap. But before we do that, there are a couple of news stories that we just want to touch on quickly. The first is that on January 28th, the SEC released a tokenization taxonomy for tokenized securities. Now, this was an interesting release because it was relatively comprehensive. So the SEC created a framework for tokenizing securities, and in line with Hester Peirce's guidance, the memo does read that tokenized securities are still securities. So no surprises there. But maybe the more interesting aspect is that it really creates two paths for tokenizing securities, either issuer-sponsored tokenized securities, in which the actual issuer, so in the context of equity, this would be the actual equity itself, or a third-party sponsored tokenized security. So that would be someone like coming in, tokenizing someone else's stock or someone else's security. And the guidance was relatively comprehensive. And interestingly, under the third-party sponsored model, the SEC also explicitly created a call out for synthetic equity securities. So opening the door for someone to either create tokenized securities that transfer essentially the entire typical ownership of an equity where you would have governance and dividend rights, or opening up the door for something like an equity return swap, tokenized equity return swap, where you're just exposed to the economic exposure of the underlying equity. So I would say relatively comprehensive release from the SEC and solid momentum on the regulatory front, which is a theme over the past year. But I think Max has a new story to talk about with some tweets out of Vitalik and the Ethereum community.
I think before we do that, just one thing on like the SEC guidance. They essentially covered like all the existing structures we're seeing now, right? Jack, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think I always am looking at things from the sort of the venture lens. And like, we've just seen so many projects that touch like real world assets, right? We call them tokenized RWAs, but it's really just like stocks, commodities, you know, things that you can invest in on a traditional platform in developed countries. But like a lot of that innovation has started to happen, but it has to be like put in these weird wrappers and can only be touched in the primary markets offshore. And so like it's starting to happen. We just haven't had like clarity that allows, in particular, like US citizens to be able to access it and for like real rules to be put in place. So I think that it's like a development to potentially have, you know, some of these rules put in place and maybe enable, you know, people in the US to be able to start to access some of the stuff and see DeFi integrations from, you know, major tokenized asset issuers.
Awesome.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And I guess I'll maybe add another comment here, which I think it is interesting and well-timed that it follows both the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange announcing plans to support tokenized equities. So a lot of momentum on that front.
Yeah, definitely well-timed. It's like you're always going to be playing catch-up in their role, but I thought it all kind of seemed like a cohesive action or wave that's occurring. So from my end, we've got Vitalik going on a bit of a tweeting social media blog spree lately. Most recently denouncing the rollup-centric roadmap, kind of. And we'll get into that today. There's a lot to discuss there, but like some highlights from his recent tweet were specifically, he said L2s are not Ethereum, which has been, like, believe it or not, a contentious discussion and topic. And then he also said L2s are not how Ethereum is scaling. And that really gets to the heart of, like, everything that's changed in, you know, from Vitalik's and the Ethereum Foundation's, like, original vision of the roll-up-centric roadmap and, like, where we are today. So I'm really hoping we can kind of uncover that almost, like, 180 pivot that we've seen recently and, like, maybe add some context in terms of how did we get here, why do we think it's happening, and then what it looks like going forward. But yeah, that was very exciting. It caught a lot of people off guard, I would say, and that's why particularly it caught some headlines. I know my whole Twitter feed is people talking about or responding to Vitalik and his recent posts.
Yeah, as is mine. My Twitter feed is probably more Bitcoin-centric than yours. So I think that speaks to how far-reaching this was. But maybe for a bit of context, Max, could you, like, take us back a step and just outline what was the roll-up-centric roadmap? Like, why was this so important? And why has it been such a focus? And why is this seemingly 180 a big deal?
Yeah, so, I mean, for almost as long as I can remember, this was, like, pre-merge, right? Pre-2022. It was kind of the overarching discussion around how do we scale Ethereum. And Jack, I know you actually did some work around sharding. Like, when that was probably the original, like, scaling vision was sharding, and then they pivoted. I specifically recall you covering that topic, you know, way back when. So that was good to see. But yeah, the roll-up-centric roadmap was just one solution that they came up with in terms of how do we scale Ethereum so, like, everyone in the world can use Ethereum for, you know, whatever it is that they want. And really the goal of, like, you could go about this different ways, right? Like, Solana is a really good example. Their goal or their, like, roadmap is just to have everything happen on the base layer, the base chain of Solana. And that's kind of the North Star that all of their development efforts get put towards, just, like, making sure everything can happen in this one location. Now, the roll-up-centric roadmap was a bit of a unique idea where, like, the goal was to keep the Ethereum base layer just very simple in design. So, like, essentially ensuring that you could always run Ethereum, the Ethereum software, on a standard laptop. So, you know, most people in the world would be able to access it. And in this context, you'd have all of the world's transactions taking place on other blockchains that would essentially have the same security guarantees as the Ethereum L1. So just like on Ethereum, users would be confident that their funds, like, wouldn't get stolen, right? That their transactions wouldn't be censored. This is what I essentially mean by, like, having the same security guarantees. So that was the goal, right? And that is specifically, that security part is specifically the part that didn't really materialize. And that's essentially what Vitalik's tweet is identifying. The vision 4 years ago, he's saying, looks a lot different. Like, he was expecting it to be a lot different today than what he's seeing currently for a number of reasons, but mostly that security piece. And that's essentially why he's saying the vision failed, right? Not because there was, like, a lack of usage on layer twos. Right? Like, nobody would argue that, you know, layer twos have failed from a usage perspective, right? We can see all the transactions, can see all the activity. For the past, like, 2 years, that chart has been up and to the right, right? He's really arguing on that security component. That's, like, the part that hasn't progressed as much as he'd like to see. Like, I personally wasn't surprised seeing this tweet, but I understand how a lot of people would be taken aback a little bit. Because there were a lot of, like, forces that essentially got us here. But you would only see those if you were really tuned into the core development process and almost looking at it from within the Ethereum ecosystem. But I totally get, like, onlookers from outside the ETH ecosystem that aren't as tapped in would definitely be caught off guard by, like, the 4 year long roll-up centric roadmap kind of coming to an end, right? That's a big headline.
Yeah. It does feel like, I don't know if watershed moment is the right term. Like, to your point, I think maybe the writing was on the wall a little bit. What do you think the fallout is from this? Like, does much change in the next 3, 6, 12 months? And then, like, for me, the most interesting question is, like, what happens what's the response from L2 to all of this? Do we think that some of them will pivot and make their own L1s, or is it just business as usual and you're operating on what Vitalik and Ethereum is now stated as an obsolete or not the current roadmap of Ethereum? Max, you've probably thought a lot more about this than I have, so curious on what your take is.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Like, kind of like I said, from my point of view, nothing has really specifically changed with this tweet or headline in particular, right? This was almost just like an amalgamation of everything that's happened over the past couple of years, kind of all being observed and explained by Vitalik, like what the vision originally was and the differences he's seeing in that today, right? So personally, I don't think much changes. I think a lot has changed over the past 2 years that has gotten us to this point. Specifically, I think one of the very first kind of signals that we got that like community stakeholders wanted to prioritize the layer one was validators actually raising the gas limit themselves, right? Historically, that's been associated with an upgrade where developers will decide, hey, we want to raise the gas limit during this upgrade. But there's actually this mechanism where validators can signal whether they want to increase the gas limit like at any point in time. So we actually saw that early last year, kind of as a response to just like the initial discussions of like, what do we prioritize? So that was kind of the first big shift. And that came from the community or the people actually running the validators and securing the chain. So I thought that was a big signal that something really like fundamentally had changed in like what users and stakeholders wanted.
From the validator's perspective, was there financial incentive such that they're not making any money off of the L2 transactions anyway, so might as well have it off the L1s? Like, I would think there's some incentive, like a lot of these validators are run by third parties that have a profit incentive.
Yeah, I would assume that's like the main incentive that they're operating under, and more transactions in every block that they share means more money for them.
You know, I'm just thinking a lot here, like sequencers on L2s are the ones that are making all the money from transaction fees, right? Versus validators on the L1 themselves. And the validators aren't really making that much from the batched L2 transactions. Is that the right way to think about it?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And that was one of my big takeaways of his tweet, is that throughout the past year, a lot of the discourse around the rollup-centric roadmap has been around this value accrual. Like, where are the transaction fees going? A lot of the skeptics were pointing out that, hey, it's not a great system because a lot of that value is just going to other ecosystems or other tokens and not Ethereum validators or the Ether token, right? So it's a really good point you make. And the other one I would always hear is around like liquidity fragmentation, right? Those two were probably the most talked about, like, reasons why so-and-so didn't really like the rollup-centric roadmap. I think the most interesting point is that Vitalik didn't mention either of those in his rationale for like why the rollup-centric roadmap isn't working, right? Like, that is not something he discussed at all. It was all around the user security guarantees across the ecosystem, right? So clearly his priorities, which I found to be very consistent, really revolve around the users and trying to just maximize the safety and the amount of value that like Ethereum provides to its users.
Yeah, I think one interesting thing that he specifically called out is the progress of L2s from stage zero to stage one to stage two, and saying that he was disappointed in the pace of progress from stage one to stage two with a lot of L2s. Could you maybe just give for listeners like a quick overview of what that even means and why that's important?
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to get too technical into the like details of like stage zero through stage two, but essentially a couple years ago, Vitalik laid out like a reasonable path that layer two platforms could follow to eventually get to that stage where the security of layer twos was the same as the security of the layer one, right? And that was essentially why he's now saying that layer twos aren't Ethereum, because he's looked around and essentially he's just not happy with the progression that layer twos have made on that security front. And back to Jack, your point, like layer twos, what is their incentive? It's their businesses, right? They're here to make money. So a lot of their development work over the past year or two has been around increasing the number of transactions they can process and improving the user experience so they gain more activity and more users, right? So it's clear that that was the incentive for layer twos to do that. And like the stages that Vitalik proposed, it's a lot of work that you would have to set aside as a business to, as like an expenditure, which you could be using, you know, those resources to put towards gaining more users and more adoption. So maybe that was really kind of at the heart, like of where the incentives maybe went wrong in terms of the roll-up centric roadmap. And maybe there was just a too heavy of an assumption that like layer twos would really be prioritizing this thing that wouldn't make them a whole bunch of extra money.
Do you think this is a waving of the flag in the modular versus monolithic debate, and Solana, I don't know, achieved some kind of victory, moral victory or something of that nature?
You could probably argue that. We could have a discussion around that. I didn't read the tweet as a waving of the white flag, honestly. I read it more as a kind of a realization or like a level setting with everyone about where he now sees the puck going, right? Because it's on a different course than what he initially envisioned, right? Like he is now coming from the position where he's confident that the L1 can scale, that validators are going to support that, and that users prefer that as well, right? Like one of the big reasons I think underlying all of this and like why prioritizing the L1 could arguably have been the right decision from the onset was that throughout this entire roll-up centric roadmap, we saw the majority of the TVL or majority of the value in the digital assets ecosystem remain on the Ethereum L1, right? So you have not only validators with their incentives, as you mentioned, but we also have users like specifically voting and saying with their money that they're holding that, hey, we really value the Ethereum L1.
I think that's an interesting point, Max, and maybe along similar lines. I know we were having a discussion earlier in the week, and I think on one side, you could say like, okay, Solana proved that you can have high throughput and support a lot of activity on the L1. And so therefore Ethereum decided to pivot, but you made a different point, which is actually that Ethereum kind of like came to this realization that you could raise the gas limit and still run Ethereum on a personal computer. And maybe that was the real reason. Could you maybe dive into that a little bit?
Yes, this is kind of the future mess that I'm going to have to deal with, because their approach now to solving that issue, it can get very complex, right? And maybe that's one of the fallouts we can talk about, or like one of the trade-offs, right? But kind of like the brute force solution of just scaling any sort of blockchain is what you would call just like increasing the number of transactions that can fit in a block, right? But the trade-off of doing that solution is that it increases the requirements of the computer that can run the software, right? And that's something that Ethereum as a network, not only Vitalik, kind of values pretty highly, is that accessibility feature. So that's why the future upgrades are like the trade-off of this whole pivot is really going to be like more complex, like nuanced and like very refined changes to Ethereum, such that almost like making it very lean and efficient and optimizing a lot of things. So all of those small optimizations kind of add up to a large increase in performance while still being able to, you know, run on a standard computer. So that is going to be a challenge for me and everyone else in the Ethereum community. Like, what I know for certain is going to be a result of this entire thing. It's really hasn't been kicked off in any way by his tweet, but it's just the general trajectory is that the Ethereum L1 will become just like more complex. When you factor in like developers trying to like have a bit of a more ambitious upgrade schedule as well. Like they're trying to work faster and upgrade the protocol quicker. You have these two kind of big, you could imagine like users or any stakeholders being a little concerned or hesitant around that complexity. I personally know very few people that know like how the entire Ethereum sausage is made per se, right? Like there are a lot of different components to this network. And, you know, the more you add complexity to it, the smaller that group gets. So that is probably one of my biggest concerns going forward. We'll see if they budge at all, right? In terms of being able to run Ethereum on a standard laptop, right? Like maybe they just change the benchmark or move the goalposts. Like that's a very possible like end result of this. And we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I was going to ask maybe from Ethereum developers, that's like the goal, but from the institutional allocators that are bringing capital on chain, how much does that matter?
Yeah.
I would argue probably less.
As more stakeholders get involved, their priorities are going to change. So yeah, maybe it's just like a reasonable thing. And that's something we can all agree on. And maybe it's somewhere in between a standard laptop and like a data center, right? So there's always going to be some trade-off. I personally always thought Bitcoin benchmarking like a Raspberry Pi was like a bit silly, right? Because we all know technology and computers improve over time, right? So that would allow you to increase the requirements over time. So it's kind of a moving target too, which all kind of confuses what that benchmark really, really means.
You can run Bitcoin on a Raspberry Pi, but I will say the initial block download is quite lengthy.
Is it weeks?
It is weeks.
That benchmarking process alone is just like too difficult for me personally. Like, I don't know what a great benchmark would be.
Well, I think with that, like maybe we take a bit of a forward look. Like you have mentioned that you were not necessarily surprised by this tweet from Vitalik. So do you think this changes the roadmap and the future upgrade schedule for Ethereum at all? Or are we still on the same roadmap essentially?
It's a really good question. It's definitely, so what I've said previously and what I'll probably continue to argue is that the roadmap is roughly the same, but the priorities have shifted, right? I think August of last year, the Ethereum Foundation released three strategic initiatives to kind of just align everyone on like what we're working on. And they had three priorities at the time. One of them was scaling the L1. One was scaling via L2s, and the third was improving the user experience. But there was no weights assigned here, right? It was just, hey, here's the three things we think are pretty important. And I would argue that they've largely delivered on that second one of scaling via L2s. They have already carved out like a large section, if you will, of the Ethereum blockchain that's specialized for L2s, right? They've done that job. And I wouldn't say there's like a tremendous amount of extra work that needs to be done there to like complete that goal, right? What Vitalik is really saying is that, hey, we've done our part. We've adjusted the base layer to make it more, to make it amicable for layer two so they can help along and share the journey with us. But it was really the L2s that didn't do it. That maybe didn't hold up their side of the deal, even though it wasn't a deal, right? So all of this to say is I don't think too much changes, but I would expect like future upgrades to just really be focused on the L1, since you could argue they've done their part for L2s. And hey, we now know we can scale the L1 through a bunch of different ways, right? However complex they may be. That would be my projection of the future, really just all L1 focused. And they're going to be like complex, pretty like nuanced changes that might be tough like to follow. So yeah, you'll definitely need someone on the inside to break that down for us. And that's like what a lot of our research team does, as well as yours, Matt. So got a lot of work on our hands going forward, I'm suspecting.
Well, that's certainly nothing new. Maybe one other thing like future looking, I just wanted to pick your brain on, is that Vitalik did in this tweet, like call out specific use cases for L2s. So like we haven't really mentioned that so far, but could you maybe just detail like what he said he thought good specific use cases for L2s in the future were?
Yeah. So for some context, a lot of like what we've already seen go to market right now is what they call like general purpose blockchains, which are essentially just faster versions of Ethereum. They're not necessarily specialized for like one task. And when I say one task, like some of the specific use cases he mentioned were even like non-financial related or like high, like HFT style trading, right? So he's basically saying, hey, we've got the scaling on the general purpose side. We can handle that, but you're more than welcome to like carve out some specialization, whatever that might be. The options he gave were like social media, could even be like video games, right? The options are endless when it comes to a programmable blockchain. So he's basically saying, hey, go crazy, like find a niche that is like unique, because we have the general purpose stuff covered, essentially is how I read it. So I think it actually is an exciting time in the L2 space, given that there are so many companies that have already invested in the space and have like reasonable infrastructure set up. Be curious to see like which ones take advantage of this opportunity to really pivot and really specialize, because Vitalik has said like that's what's needed. There are certain things that like might be best suited on layer two. So he's still keeping that door wide open. And by no means is, you know, are they planning to like rip out the whole like blob section of Ethereum, right? They're still going to support layer twos in the way they do today. It's just their ongoing development might not prioritize that as much.
Yeah, I'm hoping from like early stage projects, I don't know that this directly impacts it, but hopefully we'll see, you know, more focus on application and less on creating more block space and infrastructure. I feel like that's a narrative that's gone on for a while. And you can always make incremental improvements to this. It's still like early stage technology, but you know, if Ethereum is focused on from providing, you know, the general purpose L1 with enough throughput, I mean, there already is enough block space across these blockchains, especially when you add in the L2s, even though there's obviously like security assumptions that are made there. But just, you know, hopefully there's some additional amount of focus on creating actual applications.
And to add on to that, that there's an opportunity and an incentive for layer twos to do this, because Ethereum has already successfully scaled the L1 to, you know, some degree, right? Fees are consistently very low, like relatively speaking. You rarely hear about fee spikes being an issue for any Ethereum user nowadays. So it honestly seems like there might even be a bit more incentive to go explore and experiment and really see what the market wants, because Ethereum, not only what Vitalik is saying, but like the actual data is supporting that, that idea that Ethereum is filling that need, at least for now, in terms of just general purpose block space.
Yeah, definitely an exciting time. Max, you want to leave us with any parting thoughts as our resident Ethereum expert?
One thing we didn't get to cover was the like credibility, or like I looked up to Vitalik for this tweet, right? Some will see it as waving the white flag or him wearing some mistake on his sleeve. And he did that. Like he's objectively looking at the situation and saying, hey, this is not what I envisioned. So we're going to pivot for the sake of users and to make sure Ethereum remains like as useful for the world as possible. I thought that was very remarkable. And just for our listeners that may not have understood anything we discussed today, I thought that, you know, probably the biggest takeaway for me is just like how transparent Vitalik's approach to all of this is. And I'm really seeing like on my Twitter feed and from the community, a lot of support in like just his objective view and his like consistent prioritization of just like making Ethereum as valuable as it can be to its users and the world. So I thought that was probably the biggest takeaway if you didn't get anything else.
I think that is a great way to end it. I mean, it's an exciting time. I think there's more exciting developments to come out of the Ethereum community, and Max will be sure to keep everyone informed.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2025 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.